Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's How Do We Fix It with Richard and Jim.
Sean Gobin, walking away from war.
So one of the great theories that are out there that looked back on ancient times of why we didn't see post-traumatic stress issue in the armies of ancient time, well, they marched home together. So after they fought this campaign abroad, these armies would march home, and these marches home would take, you know, months, sometimes years. And the actual act of walking home with your fellow comrades in arms gave you that time and space to just kind of process and decompress from the experience of war. And so by the time you got home, you were in a better place now to transition to the next chapter of your life. There's lots of anger issues. There's lots of isolation from family and friends. It's just that survival reaction that you're having towards people. Post-traumatic stress is not a disorder. It's a survival mechanism.
How do we fix it?
Since 2001, more than 2.5 million vets have returned home from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Many veterans come back with war wounds, physical, psychological, emotional. The transition from war to civilian and family life is tough. Some vets shut themselves away from those who they love and turn to alcohol or drugs.
While there have been great advances in how doctors treat physical injuries, mental challenges such as depression, PTSD, or addiction can be much harder to cure.
So today we look at a solution, a hopeful journey of healing. Sean Gobin is the United States Marine Corps veteran who founded Warrior Expeditions, and he joins us via Skype from Thornton, New Hampshire.
So welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to speak to you both.
So the work you're doing is so important, and it starts with a personal journey of your own. Tell us about your hike on the Appalachian Trail.
Sure. So after serving 12 years in the United States Marine Corps, which included 3 combat deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, I made the decision to get out of the Marines and then attend grad school. And so the timing worked out where I was getting out in the spring of 2012, and I wasn't going to start grad school until the fall. And hiking the Appalachian Trail had always been a dream of mine since I was a kid, and I saw the Appalachian Trail and learned about it traveling during the summers with my family, and hearing that only 20% of the people that attempt the Appalachian Trail finish it. And so to a Marine, that's a challenge. So, I was like, I'm going to do that. And so I got out of the Marine Corps on March 14th, 2012, and I drove right out of the back gate of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, to Springer Mountain in Georgia with some random gear I had laying around my garage. And then, 4.5 months later, I completed the entire trail.
So for people who don't really know this classic through hike, as it's called, tell us a little bit about it. It's over 2,000 miles. What makes it so hard?
Sure. So it's approximately 2,185 miles. It stretches from Georgia to Maine. And it is a very, very challenging trail for a number of reasons. First is just the physical exertion required to hike up and down all these mountain ranges basically all day, every day.
And the trail goes over the mountains in most cases. Most trails avoid unnecessary climbing and descending, but the Appalachian Trail actually goes over most of the mountains, right?
Correct. For all the long-distance trails, the Appalachian Trail is the hardest on the body because at no point in the trail are you hiking on a flat surface. You're either going up or down, and you're usually going up and down on an average of 3 or 4 peaks per day. And the ground is also very broken depending on what section of trail you're on. So there's a lot of mud, roots, rocks, broken ground. So just the physical exertion of going up and down all day and then the broken ground that you're traversing over is extremely hard on the body. And one of the number one reasons people are unable to complete their journey are just due to injuries, overuse injuries from trying to traverse this very rugged terrain. So that would be the main thing that makes it difficult. The second thing that makes it difficult is if you make it to the halfway point for the first 3 months, the second 3 months becomes a mental challenge. It's you against yourself trying to complete this goal of hiking all 2,200 miles.
What did you learn along the way that you didn't expect to?
Sure. So at first it was a personal challenge of something I just wanted to do to say that I had done. And through happenstance, it ended up being an incredibly therapeutic experience that literally saved my life. So what happened to me internally while I was on this trail was the first thing was, you know, you're essentially out in nature for 12 hours a day. So you're not in front of the TV, you're not in front of your cell phone, you're not in front of a computer. It's just you and yourself with your thoughts all day, every day for months. And what happens is your brain has no decision then to just process everything that you've gone through in your life up to that point. And so for people that are struggling with trauma that have never faced the trauma they've dealt with, it gives you an excellent opportunity to process and decompress and finally come to terms with everything you've been through.
So, Sean, in your case, what had you gone through? What did you need to process?
Sure. So there were a number of things. During my first deployment, I was a tank platoon commander during the initial invasion of Iraq in 2003. Very kinetic environment, but the most traumatic thing that I experienced during that deployment was the loss of a good friend of mine who was a fellow platoon commander who was on a road just north of where I was located, and he ended up getting killed in an enemy ambush. And so, you know, that was very difficult to deal with. And then my second and third deployments, mostly my second deployment, was really a, you know, that's when we really started to fight the counterinsurgency war. And so, you know, I describe that deployment as a big game hunting trip for humans. And so the psychological toll of hunting other human beings for 7 months really makes you, I would say, numb to humanity. And then my third deployment, I was training the Afghan National Security Forces, both their military and police forces, and that was at the height of what we called the insider attacks, where the Taliban had infiltrated the Afghan security forces and were attacking the advisor teams that were training them. And so within the first month of us being in country, one of our sister teams was sitting down and having lunch with their Afghan partners, and two of the Afghans were actually Taliban, got up and killed a colonel and two sergeants that were on that team. And so I had to spend the next 11 months training these Afghans, you know, I was wondering if one of them was going to turn on us at any moment. And so, you know, you're always on this alert state of mind. And, you know, when you're in that state of mind for almost a year, it's really hard to basically switch back to a non-vigilant mode.
How did your PTSD affect your life?
Well, that was one of the main reasons I decided to leave the Marines. I could really start to notice I was starting to struggle. At the time, I didn't really understand what was going on, but I could see the effects of it. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, anger management issues, a lot of social anxiety issues, isolation issues, basically retrograding from family and friends, having a hard time connecting with people. And so I could tell something wasn't right and something, you know, was not the way it was supposed to be. And I knew that obviously it was effective my deployments, and I needed a significant, you know, lifestyle change in order to fix that.
How visceral was the pain? Was it difficult on a daily or an hourly basis?
No, it's nothing intense. You know, it's kind of like putting a frog in cold water and then you're gently turning up the heat. It's not an all of a sudden thing. It's a, you know, over days and months and years, you really start to notice that your lifestyle has really started to change.
So what kind of a job is the VA doing to help our veterans who've been through some of these experiences and maybe are suffering from PTSD or other forms of carryover from their time in theater?
Well, the Department of Veteran Affairs are doing, you know, essentially what they can with what they have, and it's really it's a capacity issue. You know, we really started to see the influx of veterans returning home in the early 2000s, and then astonishingly, we started to realize that many of them were suffering with post-traumatic stress in the upwards of 20%, just that are being reported, which the actual number is probably much higher. And so the Department of Veteran Affairs essentially offers two types of treatments. One of them is talk therapy, where you go down and you sit down and you speak with a psychologist or a counselor, which has its own barriers to effectiveness, mainly because, as I mentioned before, you know, having veterans don't really feel comfortable opening up about these experiences to non-veterans, non-combat veterans. And so they're much more comfortable talking about these experiences with somebody who's been there and done that and that can relate to what they're talking about. So that's a barrier.
And a lot of counselors at the VA, they're not combat veterans.
Exactly, they're psychologists. And then the other barrier to that type of treatment is, you know, you've got to make an appointment. So on Tuesday at 2 o'clock, you're going to show up to the counselor's office, and you're going to have to bare your soul and talk about all these terrible things that you don't want to talk about. And it just doesn't work that way. You may not be ready or comfortable to talk about those things at that time with those people. The second option you have is medication therapy, which has a number of issues as well. Usually they have to do all kinds of experimenting with the medications to figure out which medication is the best cocktail for you. And through that process, and then even when they figure out which cocktail is best for you, a lot of the side effects of the medication therapy are sometimes and oftentimes worse than the symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
Why is that?
Well, mainly because you're playing with the chemical balances within your brain, and you're causing unnatural imbalances of chemicals in your brain that aren't natural, and so now you're having these side effects that's due to the medication, and then when you report these side effects to the VA, they give you more medication to then counter those side effects, and so now you've got an entire cocktail of drugs that your system is trying to fight and adapt to that's just not a natural balance for what your body chemistry is supposed to be. And so you have all these incredible side effects.
So when you were hiking the trail and making that journey, was there a particular day when you kind of realized that, hey, this is really good for me, maybe it would be good for other veterans as well?
I wouldn't say it was a particular day. I could just start to notice changes as I was making my way up the trail. You know, changes included, you know, first of all, just the physical exertion. I mean, the physical exertion of the activity really helps you to deal with a lot of the anxiety and that hyper vigilance that a lot of veterans, you know, tend to deal with. Well, I did the trail with another Marine that I had been deployed with. And so it was good to have somebody there to talk to. So as you're unpacking all of these things in your head, to have somebody that was with you that had been through something similar that understands what you're going through was also very, very helpful. The third thing that I started to notice was all of the communities that I had connected with along the way that were supporting my journey, picking me up off the trail, giving me a place to stay and hot meal before putting me back on the trail. That reinstilled the basic faith in humanity that I'd lost along the way. Because essentially after 3 combat deployments dealing with, you know, the absolute worst of humanity, you start to have a really cynical view of people in society. And so to go through this experience where all of these people who don't even know you are essentially, you know, helping you and supporting you, it really reestablishes that basic sense of goodness in people.
So getting out in nature and spending long, strenuous days, you know, hiking along a trail or doing some of the other things that your program sponsors, that's a different approach. And in your experience, how did that help you get healthy?
Yeah, it's a very different approach. It's a very long-term approach, and that's why it's not, you know, an effective solution that the Department of Veteran Affairs can really execute. And it's mostly because of the duration. You know, these journeys take anywhere from 3 to 6 months to complete, and it really takes that amount of time for you to really have both the physical, mental, and emotional therapeutic value that's there. You know, if you want to look at the root problem, it's not the post-traumatic stress, it's not the VA, it's not the medication. If you want to go back to really what the root cause of post-traumatic stresses. I think Dr. Hoag, who wrote a book called Once a Warrior, he's an Army psychiatrist who wrote this great book. And in his book, he makes the analogy of post-traumatic stress is not a disorder. It's a survival mechanism. And he gives the example of, you go back to the caveman days, if a caveman is attacked by a lion and survives, the next time he sees that lion, he's going to have this visceral reaction towards that lion. And it's because it's a survival mechanism to ensure that he survives from being attacked by lions. So you fast forward now to the the armies of ancient times, or even just warfare in general. And when you're in combat and you have humans that are trying to kill you now, you have that same reaction that the caveman did to the lion. And so now you return home and you're having the same survival reaction to humans that the caveman did to the lion. And so that's why when you come home, you have such a hard time interacting with other people, which is why there's lots of social anxiety issues. There's lots of anger issues. There's lots of isolation from family and friends. It's just that survival reaction that you're having towards people. And so, and unfortunately, there's not a magic short-term solution to fix that. It's a long-term solution. So one of the great theories that are out there that looked back on ancient times of why we didn't see such, a prevalent post-traumatic stress issue in the armies of ancient time, one of the theories is, they marched home together. So after they fought this campaign abroad, these armies would march home, and these marches home would take, months, sometimes years. And the actual act of walking home with your fellow comrades in arms gave you that time and space to just kind of process and decompress from the experience of war. And so by the time you got home, you were in a better place now to transition to the next chapter of your life.
And we even had that during World War II with troop ships, where it often took couple of weeks for the troops who were together to come back from the front or from Europe to the United States.
And I would say it was even longer than that, because once even the fighting stopped, those units were in place for quite a long time before they even retrograded back. And so there was a huge time lapse between the time the fighting stopped until they actually retrograded home. The way we do deployments now, from Vietnam forward, you're actually on the ground fighting, and then the next day you hop on an airplane and you're home within 72 hours, and then you're back in the United States driving down 95 or walking through Walmart, and there is no transition process there.
Time for a mid-roll break, Jim, and a word about sharing.
What's that?
We need our listeners' help in building our Fix-It community.
If you like what you hear, please spread the word about our podcast on social media or tell your friends.
Our Twitter handle is FixItShow, and you can also find How Do We Fix It on Facebook and Instagram.
And if you don't like our show, just take a long walk in the woods and talk to yourself about it.
The benefits of nature may change your mind.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we find out more about the work of Warrior Expeditions, just a quick clip from one of the YouTube videos that your site links to.
Warrior Hike provides veterans with all the equipment and supplies they need to complete a long-distance hike. It's just like a deployment, except instead of going to fight a war, your mission is to be a civilian again.
So you were on the Appalachian Trail. You realized there was something really healthy and therapeutic about this journey that you were taking. When you got off, how long did it take for you to start putting the pieces together for Warrior Expeditions? How did you get started?
Yeah, that was almost immediate. A lot of the board members for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, which is the organization responsible for maintaining the Appalachian Trail, a lot of their board members had the idea for a few years about starting a veteran outreach hiking program along the Appalachian Trail in honor of the very first person to hike the entire Appalachian Trail, which was a World War II veteran who in 1948, after returning home from World War II and was really struggling with transition, you know, told his friends and family he was going to go walk off the war. And then he became the very first person 4.5 months later to hike the entire Appalachian Trail from Georgia to Maine.
Yeah, this is Earl Schaffer, right?
Earl Schaffer.
Yeah, I did my homework, but I didn't hear the pronunciation of his name.
And there weren't a lot of backpackers back in those days.
No, there was not. And so in his honor, they wanted to create, a veteran hiking program. And they had been watching my hike on social media, and they had reached out to me and presented their idea. And I had said, wow, it's the exact same thing I thought about during my journey. And so we immediately started working together to create the very first Warrior Hike program, which would then kick off the next spring in 2013.
Yeah, okay. Tell us about that hike.
So the build up to it was interesting. I was already in grad school, I built the website during finals, and then I got on the phone and I spent 2 weeks calling every outdoor manufacturer and retailer that I could find on the internet and begging for gear and supplies. And the timeline was so short. They had all the gear shipped directly to Georgia. The first group of 14 veterans that we supported, we met them in Georgia to a mountain of boxes that had arrived of various hiking equipment and clothing. And we got everybody outfitted. Amazingly, everything was there. It was a miracle. And then we started hiking. I spent the first week hiking with them, teaching them everything I knew from my experience previous year. And they were off. So the first thing we had done was provide them the outdoor equipment and clothing that we had donated from the various outdoor companies. And then all of the people that I had met during my journey, I had reached back out to and said, hey, would you be willing to host these veterans as they pass through your towns? And they, of course, said, absolutely. And so, we passed all this information to our veterans that were hiking the trail, and they had, just an overwhelming amount of community support of people that were, getting them, picking them off the trail, giving them a place to stay, giving them a warm meal and, getting them back on the trail the next day. And, really that first year was an experiment, because I knew what I had experienced. And so really that first year was a test to see if other veterans would have the same therapeutic effects that I had had in 2012. And sure enough, by the end of the hike, they all reported that they had, received, experienced the same kinds of things that I did during my journey. And so that was our proof positive in the first year of Warrior Hike on the Appalachian Trail.
Okay, so let's say a vet approaches your organization and says, I'd like to go on a hike. What happens? What kind of support do you give to that veteran?
Sure. So if they're selected, the first thing we do is we mail them out all their hiking clothing, so shoes and pants and shirts and jackets and hats and gloves and base layers, make sure all that stuff fits. So that's the first thing we do. And then we start, flooding their email inbox with information about the trail and hiking and everything they're going to need to know to prepare. And then the next thing is we meet them at the trail start point, typically the weekend before we start hiking. Sunday, we then break out all the gear and we teach everybody how to use the gear, and we go through hiking techniques and common pitfalls and problem solving that they can experience along the way. Then we shadow them during the first week to make sure they're set up for success. And then from there, give them the contact info of all the community supporters along the way that provides transportation, lodging, and food at all the different towns the trails cross. We also provide them a monthly $300 stipend. And then I have staff members who support their hike during the entire journey. So I have one staff member who makes sure all their gear is good to go. And if they have any issues, We can get it warrantied out. And then we also have two psychologists on staff who are also both veterans. So it's a really effective way of conveying some of the knowledge and tools that you'll need in order to learn to cope with post-traumatic stress.
And there's several different hikes. How long do the average one do they usually take?
So we have 8 hikes that we currently support, and they range in duration from 3 to 6 months, depending on which trail it is. So I'd say 3 of them are 6-month trails. The other 5 are 3-month trails.
And why is that necessary? Why so long?
Well, it goes back to what I said before. There's not a magic pill or a quick solution to post-traumatic stress, because your brain has been rewired into a survival mode. And it takes a long time to prepare a soldier to go off and fight a war, you know, it also takes an equally long time to, I would say, prepare yourself to come home. So Marine Corps boot camp is 3 months. A lot of our trails are 3 months, coincidentally enough. And so, again, it just takes a lot of time to really reflect and process and to come to terms with what you've gone through. It takes a lot of time to reacclimatize yourself to social situations and to learn to overcome anxiety issues. And it's a timely process. It just takes a lot of work and a lot of time to cope with some of these symptoms.
You know, I'm thinking about some of the times that I've spent hiking on the Appalachian Trail and other trails. And it strikes me that, you know, when I first heard about this, I thought, well, being out in nature is obviously therapeutic and has a wonderful effect for everyone. But also the social situation when you're hiking on a trail is you do meet people and you interact with people, but it's a somewhat simplified environment. You don't have, they're not your coworkers, they're not your family. It's not that stressful, you know, bumping into somebody and saying, hi, you know, have a good hike or having a conversation. Do you feel like it's a way to help people reintegrate into society in a less intense way than going back to their hometown and trying to go right into a job or some other, you know, intense social environment?
Yeah, exactly. As far as kind of the re-socialization effect of it, it's a perfect environment because it gives you the opportunity to be as alone as much as you want to be alone. And then, you know, we do all of our hikes with other combat veterans. And so when the opportunity arises that you want to talk to somebody, and you've got these other veterans that are out there that are there to talk to and that understand what you're going through. And so, again, unlike the appointment at 2 o'clock on Tuesday that you have to go to bare your soul, we find that a lot of the conversations that our veterans are having while on the trail happen naturally, you know, when they feel comfortable talking to who you feel comfortable talking to. And not only do you have the opportunity to talk with these other veterans that are in the program with you, but there's a lot of other people that are out hiking the trail, which is a really good way to just, you know, meet other people out in the world. You know, for me, I spent my entire adult life in the Marine Corps. And so, you know, I was surrounded with people who, you know, looked like me, talked like me, thought like me. And when I hiked the Appalachian Trail, I got exposed to, you know, an amazing cross section of American society. People that came from all walks of life, all ages, all lines of work. You know, it was a great cultural learning experience to connect with other people that are out on the trail.
And at Warrior Expeditions, you also have something called the Warrior Paddle and bike trips as well.
Yeah, that's correct. As we started to see the flood of applications that were coming in to our organization and realizing that there was a good percentage of veterans that had injuries that wouldn't necessarily allow them to hike thousands of miles, I wanted to create an alternate outdoor expedition experience for injured veterans as well. And so the first one that came to mind was paddling. And of course, you look at the map of the United States, the first thing you see is the big blue line that cuts the country in half. And so that was the spark of, well, let's create a warrior paddle program down the entire length of the Mississippi River, which can be an option for veterans who can't necessarily hike, except 1,000 miles. And so we created that in 2015. As we start to get indoctrinated into the the Wounded Warrior space, we realized that adaptive bicycling is also a very popular activity amongst veterans. And so I wanted to create a bicycle program that would go across the country. And so we created the Warrior Bike Program that traverses the Trans-America Trail that spans from Virginia to Oregon.
You know, Sean, it strikes me that all these things are just so ambitious. I mean, I used to work in a backpacking store when I was in high school, and we would sell boots and packs and stuff to people. And people would come in and say, well, you know, I'd love to hike the whole Appalachian Trail. And I'd always ask them, like, well, have you hiked? Have you done an overnight yet? Have you done a five-day hike? You know, are you experienced enough to jump into this very, very demanding, long commitment? You know, you're taking these people, some of whom, you know, they probably had experiences carrying packs and stuff in the military, but backpacking is a special set of skills. And then, boom, they're out there on this months-long journey. Do people find it challenging? What happens to the people who decide they can't really keep it up or they bail out along the way?
Well, we've done a lot over the years to set people up for success. I would say one of the most common mistakes that people sabotage their experience with is they start with the wrong gear. And so we hedge that by providing them with gear that we know is ideally suited for through hiking. So, you know, because a lot of people show up with the wrong gear, which makes the experience miserable.
It's too heavy or whatever.
Yeah, and then they got to spend a bunch more money to then buy the right gear. And so, you know, we're able to hedge that by at least starting them off with the right gear is the first thing. The second thing is there's a lot of, you know, I would say, beginner mistakes that are very common amongst first-time long-distance through hikers. And again, after, you know, knowing all the mistakes that I made during my journey and then watching a lot of the, you know, some of the trends of mistakes that are made over the years, you know, we do a very thorough job of explaining to them the common pitfalls that through hikers experience and then how, you know, to avoid them. And so there's a huge educational process there to help them avoid some of the more common pitfalls. I'll give you a perfect example, and this was especially true with veterans, you know. When people start a through hike, you know, usually the first thing they do is they throw their pack on and they go as fast as they can, as far as they can, the first 3 days.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah,
and then that's usually what causes a lot of the, you know, the overuse injuries that people fall off the trail almost immediately for. And so, you know, that's one of the major things that we hammer home, you know, is to avoid overuse injuries. You know, and then again, we shadow them for the first week, and so, you know, we're basically keeping our eye on everybody and making sure that they're doing the right things and problem-solving common issues that they're having out on the trail. So that's a big part of it. And then the next thing is the community support. To have people, you know, along the trail every 100 miles or so that you can call for help along the way is a huge deal. And so there's a huge support network along the trail. So with those things, I mean, we're able to really set people up for success. So, for example, typically the Appalachian Trail, 20% of the people who start the Appalachian Trail finish it. We roll somewhere between the 50 and 80 percentile average per year. And a lot of that is for the things that we hedge against. Now, some things are just unavoidable. I mean, injuries happen no matter how much you try to care for your body. You know, hiking 2,200 miles for a percentage of people is just going to, you know, be too hard on the knees or the back. And so inevitably there's going to be people with overuse injuries, that have to, you know, return home. Inevitably there's going to be things with family emergencies where people need to return home, or other family situations where they need to return home. And then a couple, you know, and we've done a pretty good job of screening for this, but in some cases people just, you know, they, it's not enjoyable for them. You know, you get out there and if you don't enjoy the experience of hiking and camping and, you know, doing it day after day, you know, if you're not enjoying it, it's not going to be therapeutic for you. So there's no sense in staying out there and torturing yourself for 6 months. And so, you know, it's not for everybody.
How many vets has your organization helped?
Since 2013, we've had over 200 veterans, participate in our programs.
Sean, a final question.
Sure.
Does it work? What evidence do you have that your program is making a difference?
Sure. So right when I created Warrior Hike in 2013, I got a call from a psychologist from Georgia Southern University who was a Marine veteran who was working on his PhD. And was interested in researching what the effects of these long-term wilderness experiences were on combat veterans. He was a state park ranger in a former life and an avid hiker, and had this instinct that there might be some therapeutic value there. And so since 2013, Dr. Dietrich and Dr. Joy, both PhDs now, have been providing our veterans with surveys before and after their journeys to measure what the effects have been. And the data that we've collected has been nothing short of astounding. We use the standard psychological measures for post-traumatic stress, depression, anxiety, insomnia. And again, the data that our veterans have reported back to us have been astonishing with how effective these journeys are in reducing a lot of those symptoms.
You know, Sean, our show is called How Do We Fix It? And it's just so gratifying for us to come across somebody who's doing something that really does make a difference in the world. A simple idea, but one that's hard to execute. And, you know, it's just very impressive. What can our listeners do to help?
Sure. They can go to our website at warexpeditions.org. And if they would like to donate, you can donate from our donate page. You can also follow our veterans' journeys on social media. And if any of your listeners are located next to any one of the 10 trails that we support and they want to be a community supporter, they can shoot us an email and we'll be happy to see about adding them to our community support list.
We sure hope so. Sean Gobin of Warrior Expeditions, thank you for joining us and thank you for your service.
My pleasure.
Wow, that is a remarkably ambitious program. And Sean tells us, I think it's his success rate is something like 50 to 80% of people who start the hikes and the bike trips and the paddling.
And I want to even push back on the idea that somebody who makes it for 2 months and then has to bail for some reason, that's not a failure. Right. You know what I mean? And I also know a lot of civilians who hike the Appalachian Trail. Maybe they set out to through hike it. They don't make the whole way. Then they come back in years later, often many decades later, to finish up the trail, or they do it in pieces over a number of years. So I think that just getting people to make the attempt is already a step in the right direction.
One of the things I love about speaking with Sean and hearing about Warrior Expeditions is PTSD is such an intractable problem. It seems like there's so few real fixes out there.
Right.
And here's one.
And I like his emphasis that this is a long-term, this is a long-term approach, and that, you know, you can't expect to undo everything that people have to go through in combat in a matter of days or weeks.
And just as is the case with a physical injury, very often the best cure may well be physical therapy, working on it yourself as opposed to taking a pill or expecting a doctor to do most of the work.
You know, one of my favorite and probably one of the most famous Hemingway short stories is called The Big Two-Hearted River. And it's all about a fishing trip. A guy goes on a fishing trip, and it's all about the details of how he unrolls his bedroll and gets his fishing rod ready and how he cooks his meal. And the war isn't even mentioned. But as you're reading the story, it gradually sinks in that this guy is back from, in this case, it would have been World War I. The ritual of being in nature and fishing is such a crucial part of his therapy. He's reintegrating himself with the world and with life. And I think that, you know, in all of our lives, nature has a therapeutic value that we need to appreciate. This is a particularly dramatic example of it here with these veterans. But I think for everyone, time spent in nature is an important antidote to a lot of the stresses of life. Most people don't go through what combat veterans go through, but it's still, I think, really important to recognize this.
That's a lovely observation. We'll have a link to the Hemingway story on our website, howdowefixit.me. I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Meggs.
And thanks for joining us on How Do We Fix It? Our producer is Miranda Schaefer, and this show is a production of Davies Content. We make digital audio for companies and nonprofits. Thanks for joining us.